We're holding on Samach Amud Beis, 7 lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of a long series of brises that the Gemara has been going through, mostly quoting them, sometimes discussing details in them, about how we know, as our Mishnah had said, some menachos require hagosha to touch them to the southwest corner of the Mizbeach before you take the koimetz. Some of them require tnufa, which we're going to discuss in our Mishnah now, the ones that in the upcoming Mishnah soon, the ones that require tnufa, some both, some neither. So we started going through, we were going through a long braisa that talks about how we know that the five that are brought to Nidava by an individual need Hagosha, it says clearly in the pasuk. How do we know Minchas Choyte as well? We went through a limud of a pasuk from that. How do we know also the Minchas HaOmer? How do we know also the Minchas Choyte? We said according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Minchas HaOmer you don't need a pasuk from because you can learn it from a Tzad HaShava. And we went into all of that. The last thing we said was that since the pasuk says that a person brings Asher Yosem Mei Ela LaHashem, so the word Ela teaches us that a person can bring, an individual can bring only the five types of menachas that it says there in the pasuk. A person can't, for example, bring a mincha out of barley, even though there do exist menachas of barley for a soita and for the omer, but those are not something that a person can bring voluntarily. On the other hand, if a person says I'm going to bring a mincha, he doesn't have to bring all five; he can bring whichever one he wants. So now the Gemara continues, the Braises continue. Rav Shimon Omer, when the Pasuk says Es HaMincha, when the Pasuk says in that, when it says in that Pasuk Es HaMincha, that you should bring the Mincha, Lodabas Shah Menachos, that comes to include other Menachos, besides the five that it says over there, could bring Minchas Nochrim, Minchas Nochrim, La Gosha, namely that a Mincha brought by Goyim, following the opinion of Rabbi Sagrivi later in the Masechta, that Goyim can bring a Mincha, of course, according to the opinion that they can't, then the point is moot. Or the Mincha of women, that those also require Hagosha, even though we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah that even when their korbanos don't require tnufa, or at least the tnufa is not going to be done by the owner, as we'll learn in connection with the next Mishnah, nevertheless they still need Hagosha. Shittimuk Obesis actually takes out these words, because it's not, we don't really need to learn so much that it's not going to be the, that it's going to be the mincha of women or goyim. There's no, on the surface, there's no particular reason. The fact is, whatever they're bringing is going to be one of the regular five, and we've already established the regular five near Hagosha. Rashi also has a girsa that it's not the rabbis, those two, but rather shochoite. As we learned yesterday, that we need to know also that a mincha shochoite requires hagosha as well. We learned at the bottom in the previous amud that we learned a mincha shochoite that needs hagosha from the word efa mincha, as we learned there. Yochol shani marbach shtei alechem b'lechem aponim. Now you would think that we should also learn from the words efa mincha also the shtei alechem and the lechem aponim that you need to do hagosha for them as well. No, Talmud Lama Me'ela, therefore the pasuk says from these, which is a mute, so only some menachos require Hagosha, but not those. Now we learned at the end yesterday again that according to Rabbi Yehuda, we said the word Me'ela taught us the point that a person doesn't have to bring all five menachos if he says I'm going to bring a mincha. So according to him, the word Me'ela, the Shittim Kvetzes points out, is not available for this drasha. He would have to learn that. He would have to learn that some other ways. But according to Rav Shimon, we learned it from the word Me'ela. Well, the question is, if we have a ribui from Es HaMincha to include some types of menachos that require Hagosha we wouldn't have otherwise known, and we're saying, on the other hand, Me'ela tells us not some other ones, then what's the logic that causes us to include the other menachos, the minchas noshim or minchas goyim, as we have in the Girsin, as we have in the Gemara in front of us, or minchas choyte according to Rashi? So why are we including those and saying those require hagosha? Or lahoitzi shtei lechem lechem aponim and exclude the shtei lechem and the lechem aponim that those shouldn't require hagosha? And the answer is ma'abani shar menachos sheyesh mehem la'ishin. The difference is that other menachos, the whichever other ones we're including with the words es ha-mincha, they have in common with a regular mincha that some of them goes on the fire. A regular mincha, one of the five, you take a koimetz and it's burned on the mizbeach. A mincha shchoita, the same thing. A mincha brought by women, a mincha brought by goyim, same thing. So therefore, it's more logical that they're all the same as far as hagosha. Or moitzi ani shtei alechem, alechem aponim. Whereas we'll exclude the Shtealachim and the Lachim HaPanim Shein Mehem LaIshim, where nothing of them themselves goes on the fire. Now with the Lachim, again, with the Lachim HaPanim, you have the Bulvoina that goes with them. With the Shtealachim, you have the Kvasim that go with them, but that's not part of the bread itself. Nothing of the bread itself goes on the Mizbeach. So the Braisa continues. While the minchas nesachim pulu leishim, well then, what about a minchas nesachim? What about the mincha that comes accompanying an animal korban of various types? That kind pulu leishim, it's completely burnt on the mizbeach. There's not even a kmitzah from it. Yochot yehei chouna hagosha. You would think that requires hagosha. If the rule is going to be that anything that's burnt on the mizbeach needs hagosha, then that should also. And the answer is no. Tamad leimav v'kriva. Therefore, the pasuk says he should offer it. So it, meaning only the menachos, only certain kinds of menachos, not other kinds. So if you want to ask the hot pick day, Reb Shimon already learned, we're from the word vehikriva, Udiyu in the Spraisa, which we learned yesterday, he had used the word vehikriva to say that we learned from that the minchas soita requires hagosha. We said the pasuk had said, vehivesa is a mincha, vehikriva, and vehivesa, he said, taught us the mincha soimer, and vehikriva taught us the mincha soita. So how now is he using that same word, vehikriva, to learn another din as well, to exclude the mincha nesachim? And the answer is vehikriva. The answer is because, first of all, you have the word itself. The pasuk could have said, vehikriv al mizbeach. He should offer to the mizbeach, and we understand what is he offering. The mincha that it was talking about earlier in the pasuk. So first of all, they have the word itself. It didn't need to say it at all. And second of all, once it says it, it could have said vehikriv, and it says vehikriva. So therefore, so now you're able to learn both things. From vehikriv, we learn the mincha soita because, as we said, we find the same word vehikriv oisel al mizbeach in connection with the mincha of the soita in parshas Nasai. And then the he means it, as opposed to something else, that would teach us to exclude the minchas soita. Well, again, the question is, well, what's the logic to include other menachas and say that minchas choyter or minchas noshim or whatever requires hagosha, and minchas nesachim does not? And the answer is, marbani shar menachas, it's more logical to include other menachas, which are similar, shabois v'glal atzman, where all of them have this in common, they all come individual, they all come for themselves, they all come independently. You don't bring a minchas soilas or a minchas machbas or any of the other kinds as a result of some other korban, you bring it all by itself. Moisiani minchas nesachim, shein above v'glal atzman, as opposed to minchas nesachim, which doesn't come for itself, it comes as an adjunct of a korban. Granted, it can have, as we've learned before, it is possible to bring the minchas nesachim days later than the korban itself. It's even possible to, we're going to learn later in the Masechta, we touched on it before, that you are able to volunteer to bring a minchas nesachim all by itself. But nevertheless, in general, a minchas nesachim comes together with the korban. And fine, we're not going to say that when it's brought with the korban, it's not going to need hagosha, and when not, then it will. So therefore, we're going to say as a blanket statement that minchas nesachim do not require hagosha. Tosfos points out that anyway, actually, Reb Shimon anyway had said in our Mishnah that a mincha of koyanim and minchas koyin mashiach doesn't need hagosha because there's no kmitza in them. So therefore, so based on that, you would anyway exclude the minchas nesachim because there's no kmitza from minchas nesachim either. Next, the question is, so then that's the question. Well, then minchas koinim or minchas koin mashiach voice the glal atzman yochu yutunis hagosha. Well, then a mincha brought by koinim or the mincha of the koin mashiach, the minchas chavitim, those are brought independently, not as an adjunct to some other korban. Yochu yutunis hagosha. So maybe then those should require hagosha. And now the Tanakama in our Mishnah had said that indeed they do. But here we're talking in the Braisa according to Reb Shimon, and he had said in the Mishnah that they do not. So then Talmud Lomar v'higisha. Therefore, the pasuk says that he should bring it close, which again is a miut, only it and not something else. So the question is, how you boil the gufa the chetuna hagosha? What do you mean? You need the word v'higisha to tell us the concept of hagosha. Without that, how do you know the word? And again, the question is like before, min v'higish v'higisha. Again, the Torah could have said v'higish elam izbeach. And instead it says v'gisha. So one of them teaches us the basic concept that there is such a thing as hagosha, and the other one, the hay, teaches us that only certain korbanos and not others, which again, as Reb Shimon will explain in a minute, how he knows which ones to include and which ones to exclude. So whereas the Tanna Kamma and the Mishnah again had said that a Minchas Kohenim does require Hagasha, and a Minchas Nesachim and a Minchas Nesachim does not. Okay. So Rav Shimon continues, Mara Isal without a Shama Nochas of Ahotzi Minchas Kohenim or Minchas Kohen Mashiach. Well, then what makes you say if we have something that tells us that, if we have something that tells us there has to be Hagasha and then we have a Miut, what makes you include other Menachas and say they require Hagasha and exclude Minchas Kohenim and Minchas Kohen Mashiach, according to Rav Shimon? And the answer is, the difference is other menachas, such as the minchas choita, there is some of it goes on the fire and they come independently. So you have those two factors. The yeshmehem and a third factor, the yeshmehem, the kohenim, some of them is eaten by the kohenim. So now we're going to summarize and exclude all three things that we've been discussing in the last few lines. The shteyalachim and the lachim aponim have nothing of them goes on the fire, so therefore that knocks them out. A minchas tesachim in general does not come on it by itself. It comes as an auxiliary to another korban. And we're going to exclude the minchas kohenim and minchas kohen mashiach, where nothing of them goes to the kohenim because all of them are burnt on the mizbeach. Which again, really, that does include the minchas nesachim as well. So that's Tosfos points out because before the Gemara had drawn a distinction between them. We said that minchas kohenim, the minchas kohenim doesn't do agosha. We don't do agosha, and it brought a posik for that. So therefore we mentioned the minchas nesachim separately as well. So that's how we learn, says Reb Shimon, what requires Hagasha and whatnot. So that's how Reb Shimon learns what requires Hagasha and what does not. So according to him, then again, of the ones we mentioned in our Mishnah that require Hagasha, where our Mishnah had said the five types that are brought voluntarily, plus Minchas Kohen and Minchas Kohen Mashiach, a Mincha of Goyim, a Mincha of Women, and a Mincha of Choyte, Reb Shimon takes out of that list the Minchas Kohenim and Minchas Kohen Mashiach. The Gemara finishes off with another piece of the Braisa. The pasuk is Vehirim. The pasuk says that the kohen should lift out of the mincha, should take out the kohenets. Yochol b'kli, you would think that means he lifts it out with a keli that is the size of a kohenets. Tamadlema Vehirim men of a kumso, therefore the pasuk says he should lift out of the mincha using his handful. Maharoma ha'omalahalan b'kumso, that's in a different pasuk. You have in two different places. In Parshas Vayikra, it just says Vehirim ha'kohen men ha'mincha. It doesn't say that he takes the kohenets from it. In Parashat Tzav, later on, it specifies that it's Bekumtzai. So just like later on in Parashat Tzav, it means to take it with his hand, and not a keli, Acharoma Omokan Bekumtzai, then over here also it means with his hand and not in a keli. So in other words, it actually says we have a Zera Shava between the two words. We actually learned earlier in the Masechta that it means that you don't make a measure for the size of the kohenets. We actually had a machlokas of Rav and Shmuel whether it's ma'akev or not. So that's how we learn that it's supposed to be done with the kohen's hand. Interesting point worth mentioning in this connection. Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father, has an explanation of Kabbalah. We talked about earlier in the Masechta that according to the majority of opinions, Kmitza is done with the is done with the middle three fingers of the hand, and then you use the two fingers on the end to wipe off the extra. So he has an interesting discussion about it, that the five fingers represent the five letters of Shem Elokim. And we find in Kabbalah that three of them can be swapped out, the middle three of them, the Lamed, can be swapped out for the previous letter Chof, Hey for Dalad, Yud for Tes, the other two don't because there's nothing before Aleph, and as far as Mem, it's a Shloss Mem, so it just turns into a regular Mem, and turns back into a Shloss Mem, and that creates something called Achdatam, which we talk about in some places, refers to a moderated level of Gvuris. So therefore, by using the three fingers, symbolizing the transformation of those three letters of Shem Elokim, then we moderate the gvura represented by the mincha, and now that kohenet is offered on the mizbeach, and the kohenim eat the rest. So now the Mishnah says, Eilu tunas snufa ve'in tunas hagosha. Now let's list the things that require snufa, that has to be waved, and not hagosha. Loig Shemen Shamatsoda Vashamai. First of all, the loig of oil that a Matsoda brings together with his Korbanos, and the Osham of the Matsoda, both of those, the Torah says he needs to weigh them. So that's the first thing. So the expression of the pasuk is v'lokach ha'kayin zakeves ha'echad. The kohen takes the one sheep, which is a shlag, which is an osham, and he brings it for an osham together with a loig hashemen. The heinif osim tnufa lifnei Hashem, and he waves them as a wave offering before Hashem. So after he's shechted the osham, then he takes it and waves the loig hashemen. V'habikurim k'divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Then you also have bikurim following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Namely, that we find that a different Rashi refers to a Gemara in Sukkah, where he says Bikurim requires Tznufa. There's something else called Hanocha, which is you have to place them next to the Mizbeah. Actually, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov himself, Keren Oda, points out, holds that it doesn't require Hanocha. Basically, the question is, when the Torah says V'inichoi lifnei Mizbeah Hashem alekecha, you should place it before the Mizbeah, does that refer to actually putting it down on the floor, or does it refer to Tznufa? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov learns that it refers to Tznufa. So, according to him, you don't have to place it on the floor, whereas according to the other Chachamim, you do. So he was saying that it requires tinufa, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it doesn't require hagasha because you don't put it down on the floor anywhere near the mizbeach. Following Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's opinion. Next, the emurim shalmei yochid. Then you have the emurim of the shlomim of an individual. You have also the shalmei tzibur, which we're going to talk about soon. But right now we're talking about. I mean, those have a different din of tinufa. We'll talk about that later on. But right now we're talking about a shlomim that's brought by a yochid. You take the chaylev, the chaylev together with the chos of a shoyk are waved. So you have the emurim and the chos of a shoyk. The emurim are going to be offered on his death. The chos of a shoyk are given to the kohenim. So all of them are first waved together. We'll learn the Gemara later on. And Daf Samach Beis talks about the symbolism of the waving. Echad anoshim ve'echad noshim. This applies to both men and women if they're bringing a shlomim. V'yisro v'loy ba'achirim, and it applies to Jews and not to others, meaning not to goyim, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara. What it means, first of all, that it's not universally agreed that a goy can bring a shlomim anyway. We learned a bit about it at the end of Zvachim, whether according to different opinions whether they can bring shlomim or not. But in any case, we're going to talk about on Amud Beis what it means that who exactly does the tnufa. We're going to say that there's actually a difference as far as women as well. We'll talk about that on Amud Beis. So next, continuing the list of things that need tznufa, shtelach amushne kivseh tzedas. The next thing is the shtelach and the shvuos together with the two sheep of shalmei tzibur that go along with them. Again, as we learned before, there are many other korbanos that go along with them also, but those are all just basically like almost like a second musaf. Those we said are not directly connected to the shtelach, and they're not ma'akiv the shtelach, and the shtelach is not ma'akiv them, as opposed to the kvasim are very closely tied to the shtelach. What do you do? You put the shtelachim on top of the two sheep, and you place your two hands underneath them. So one koyin holds all of them, although there is a tesefta that says that two different koyinim, each one holds one of them. In any case, so they hold them, they put the shtelechem on top of the shnei kvasim, or maniach shtei yodur lamata, and you put your two hands below, merlechomevi, malo merd, and you move them, merlechomevi, back and forth, and to the sides, malo merd, and up and down. So in all six directions, like a lulav. Shenema, shahunaf, vashahuram, because the pasuk mentions in connection with the shlomim that they were hunaf, which means waved in the different directions, vashahuram, and that were lifted, implying that it has to be lifted, that it has to go up and down. That has to go up and down as well. Okay, now we're going to have, the Gemara is going to talk about later on, Daf Samach Beis, about these shlomim, or when exactly are they waved. You have the different opinions, whether we're waving them, or only when they're alive, or also after they're shechted. So that's going to be in the Gemara on Daf Samach Beis. So Rashi points out, first of all, it says Vehin Nafta Oisem Tnufa. It says in the pasuk you should wave them at Tnufa, and therefore that means that you should wave them in all the directions. And then furthermore, Rashi explains that the fact that it says Hunaf and it says Huram by the Miluim, we learn from that, from all other Tnufas, that they're all going to be done in the same way in all six directions. Okay. Now, where does this take place? The Mishnah says, Tnufa Hoisa B'Mizrach. The Tnufa took place in the east of the Azara. Now, Rashi says that the east would be further away from the Heichal and further away from the Mizrach. Rashi holds that it means Davka, that it doesn't mean Davka. It means it can be even in the east, but you could actually do it anywhere in the Azara. That you could actually do it anywhere in the Azara that you want. On the other hand, the Rambam phrases it and says that it's done in the east, implying that it's Dazka, and the idea of that would be, in particular, when you have the idea that the Kesef Mishnah on Rambam wonders why should the Rambam imply that it's Dazka in the Mizrach? So one idea is, since in general most of these tenufas are done by the owner together with the Koyan, as we're going to talk about soon, and the owner is usually a Yisrael, and he shouldn't really be going into the western side of the Azara, which is mainly the Ezras, which is the Ezras and the Koyanim, and the area by the Mizdeach and whatever, unless there's a particular purpose, therefore better the tenufa should be done in the east. Another Karen Ora implies another point as well, that you walk into the Azara in general from the east. The main entrance into the Azara is Shaul Nikonor, which is on the east. So as soon as you come in, you should do the Tnufa as soon as possible. Don't delay the mitzvah. If you went in further and you happen to be in the west when you're going to do the Tnufa, there's no delay. Okay. But in any case, so does this mean that Dafka has to be in the east? Or does it mean that it just means could be in the east? That's the different possibilities of what the Mishnah means. Hagosha B'Mayra, as opposed to Hagosha, takes place in the western side of the Azara, specifically the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. Tnufas could, and what about, we're saying that some of the, so far we listed things that require Hagosha and not Tnufa in the previous Mishnah, and so far we said Tnufa but not Hagosha, but We're going to say next in the Mishnah that you have some things that require Hagosha and Tnufa. Tnufa is Kodmus L'Hagoshas. When you have things, such as the Korban Omer, that require both, first you do the Tnufa, then you do the Hagosha. First you wave it in the six directions, and then you do the Hagosha after that. So next, the Mishnah says, Minchas Omer, Minchas Knois, Tunis Hagosha Tnufa. So the Minchas Omer and the Minchas Knois require both those things. It's interesting that the Mishnah says Hagosha and then Tnufa, even though, as we just said, you do the Tnufa first. And we learned that. We went through, in the long braisa that we learned yesterday, we went through how we learn, according to the different opinions, that Minchas Omer and Minchas Knois require Hagosha, and Tnufa, by both of them, it says clearly in the Pasuk. It doesn't say in the pasuk, and Hagosha, we learned previously why they don't need Hagosha, because they're different than other menachas in that nothing of them goes on the Mizbeach, The Mishnah continues, Reb Shimon says you can summarize it as follows. Gimel minin to'unim gimel mitzvahs. There are three types of korbanos that between them require three mitzvahs, but shtayim b'chol achas v'achas u'shlishis ein behen. Each of them has only two of these mitzvahs and not the third. The Elohein, they are as follows. Zivchei shamet yochem v'zivchei shamet zivur, v'asham mitzvah. So the three korbanos. So Reb Shimon is focusing particularly on three korbanos and pointing out that there's a difference between them. Each one of them has out of the three mitzvahs that we're talking about, there's only two of them. Namely, he's going to talk about that you have there's two, within tnufa itself. There's two different kinds of tnufa. There's tnufa when the animal is alive. There's tnufa after it was shechted, waving the pieces of it, and then there's hagosha. And then there's smicha. There's smicha, which is leaning on the animal before you shecht it. So Reb Shimon says that between these three korbanos, the shlomim of yachad, the shlomim of tzibur of shavuos, and the asham metzora, each one of them has two out of the three. Zivchei shama yachad tonin smicha chayim or tnufa shotin. The shlomim brought by a yachad, says Reb Shimon, you have to do smicha when the animal is alive, which it actually says so. It says so in the pasuk. So, and then it means Tznufa after it's shattered, where also the Pasuk tells us that you take the Chaz of Ashoy together with the Emurim and wave it. The Inven Tznufa Chaim, there's no such thing by a regular person's Shlomim of waving them while they're alive. Zivchei Shamu Tzibur, on the other hand, the Shlomim brought by the Tzibur, on Shiluas, he says, Tonin Tznufa Chaim or Shchutin. He says they're required to be waved when they're alive and again after they're shattered. Again, the Gemara is going to discuss tomorrow, on Daf Samach Beis, different opinions on that. The Ein Behem Smicha, but on the other hand, there's no Smicha on them, because in general, there's no Smicha on most Korbanos Tzibur. There's a couple of Korbanos Tzibur where there is the Paratel and Davashot Tzibur and then some others, but basically a Korban of Tzibur in general doesn't require Smicha. So again, the Shalmei Yochid has Smicha, but only one kind of Tznufa. The Shalmei Tzibur have both kinds of Tznufa and no Smicha. Ashan Metzora, Tzon Smicho, Tznufa Chai, then continues Rav Shimon, the Ashan Metzora, the Metzora leans his hands on it and waves it while it's alive. Then, but Tznufa Shochot, they are Fakir, says Rav Shimon, you don't wave it after it's shechted, only while it's alive. So when we said before that when the Pasuk says that he should offer the Keves La'oshim, that's Loiga Shaman, and then wave them as a Tznufa, Rav Shimon is saying that means you wave it, well, you wave the Asham Metzora while it's still alive. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a Braisa, the first part of the Mishnah had said that the Asham Metzora and the log of oil need to know. First, a Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. When the Pasuk says the Hikrav Oisir L'Oshem V'Es Loig Ashamen V'Heinif Oisim Tznufa, you should offer it as an Oshem together with the log and wave them. Malamach Tzonin Tznufa Ke'echad, that means that you're supposed to wave the Oshem and the log Shemen together. How do we know that if you wave them separately, you're also Yotze? Now, you're Yotze anyway, because as it is, the Gemara is going to explain that later on in the Masechta, that B'chlal, if you didn't do the Tznufa, it's not Ma'akiv. So one possibility is that the Sfasemes talks about that maybe what it means is that if you shechted the sheep not having done the tznufa yet, then at least you should wave the log, because at least waving it is a mitzvah as well. So the Sfasemes, although he says that doesn't really seem to fit with the words of the Braisa. The Maharsham gives a different explanation. But the Maharsham says that it means that if you didn't do it at all, then you're missing an important part of the mitzvah. You didn't do mitzvah and amuvcher, as opposed to over here, we're saying if you did wave them separately, then it can even be considered mitzvah and amuvcher, and it's like 100% kapara. So how do we know that if you wave them separately, you are Yotze? Tamadim, of a hikra voice of Ashram Bahanim. Therefore, the possibility is he should offer as an Ashram, and he should wave. So now it just says he should wave the Loik Shemin, implying that the Loik Shemin can be waved by itself, and you're still Yotze. In other words, because it could have said Vahinif from, that he should wave them, and since it says Vahinif in the singular, then it means that it's only the one. A different explanation from Rabbi Gershom on the Gemara over here is Mashma, that the point is because there's a Hainif Oisoi, implying that you can wave them, that it is possible to wave them individually. Next, continues the Mishnah. Yocho Yonif Yasav Yonif. Now you would think that maybe after you wave them together, maybe you should wave each one separately, and that way you are literally being Makayim what it says in the Pasuk, the Hainif Oisoi. Therefore, the Pasuk says that you should wave it as a tnufa, as a single tnufa, meaning it could have just said the heinifos, why does that say the word tnufa? It means that it's only one waving, not two. So, b'diavad, you do two. You are yotze, but nevertheless, lachatchila, it's not lachatchila. You should be doing two lachatchila. There's only one to do of the two of them together. Okay. The Gemara had said, the Mishnah had said that the tnufa takes place in the east side of the Azara. So lifnei Hashem, when it says that you do it before Hashem, means b'mizrach. That means in the east side of the Azara. So Gemara says, what do you mean? Since when does lifnei Hashem mean b'mizrach? V'amar lifnei Hashem, earlier in the Masechta, when we talk about where Hagosha takes place. Now we said in our Mishnah, Hagosha takes place in the west. And earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara had worked out that it requires that it's done at the southwest corner of the Mizbeach. It says Lifnei Hashem El Pnei Mizbeach, and Lifnei Hashem means on the west, which is right in front of the Heichel, and El Pnei Mizbeach means in the direction of the Kevesh, which was on the south side of the Mizbeach. So therefore, so Lifnei Hashem over there means on the west side. So we say Lifnei Hashem Yochel b'mayrev. So you would think that it means exclusively in the West. And we said it actually ends up meaning in the Southwest. The point is that Lifnei Hashem means the West. All of a sudden, are you telling me over here that Lifnei Hashem means in the East? And the answer is Ami. So they answered, Hani Mili Mincha de'ikri Chatas. That refers to a Mincha which is called a Chatas. Where is it called a Chatas? Rashi explains, because the Pasuk, after it mentions the details of a Mincha, it says, Kodesh Kadoshim Hi Kachatas. So we're making an equation we're making a hekesh between a mincha and a chatas, which we've learned earlier in the Masechta, the various implications of that. Tosfos gets into a discussion of that and says it's not so simple. Another way of explaining it is that again, Rashi is saying that we learn that because it says Kodesh Kadoshim Hikachatos, because the Pasuk says by Minchas Choyte, Tosfos says that by a Minchas Choyte, it says Chatos Hi, it clearly says by Minchas Choyte, it is a Chatos, and therefore we learn from that from it to other Menachos that they're also considered like a Chatos in that connection. Now, b'chatas turna yisoid. Now, b'chatas, as we know, the blood has to be poured on the yisoid of the mizbeach. The keren dremis mizrachas lahoy lo yisoid. And the southwest corner of the mizbeach, as we know in Tzvachim, does not have a yisoid. Therefore, if the pasuk is telling you over there about the hagosha and telling you that it has to be done at a corner of the mizbeach, that has to be on the one hand el pnei mizbeach, which means it has to be on the south, but it says lifnei Hashem of necessity, it can't be the southeastern corner because then it won't be like a chatos, there won't be a yisoid over there. So therefore, of necessity, it has to be the southwest corner. And therefore, that's why you're going to do it by that corner. Tosfos has a long discussion about the ins and outs of what exactly we're learning over here, and different other Gemaras. So Tosfos brings another Gersa, just like the Chatas, meaning the Chatas Ha'oif requires the Yisoid, in the sense that we learned in Zvachim that a Chatas Ha'oif is done on the lower half of the Mizbeach, above the Yisoid, and the same way the Mincha also has to be where there's a Yisoid. So therefore, of necessity over there, since we know already it has to be someplace on the south side, and therefore our only choices are southeast or southwest, and southeast there wasn't a yisoid, therefore it's going to have to be southwards. Aval hocha, lifnei Hashem karina bay, but over here, when it just says lifnei Hashem, then it can be called, and then in the east can also be perfectly well lifnei Hashem. And therefore, again, according to Rashi, it means it could be even in the east, not necessarily, it doesn't have to, it could be just as well in the west, but it could be in the east, according to the implication of Rambam, that maybe it should be Davka in the east, and we talked about before why that would be. Tosfos, though, points out that the fact is there are other Gemaras where we find that Lifnei Hashem does mean specifically in the west. So why all of a sudden are we so still, fine, over here we don't have the point, here we don't have the point about a Mincha and a Chatas. But the question still is, where are we getting that Lifnei Hashem can ever mean the East? So Tosfos says, because what it means is, in other words, that over here, when we're talking about shechting the Oshem and bringing the Loy Shemen, so when it says Lifnei Hashem, just means that just means, in other words, that you're not doing it outside the Azara. After all, as we said before, you're waving the Oshem while it's alive before it's shechted. Conceivably, you could do it outside the Azara. So therefore, we need to be told that it means anywhere in the Azara can be called Lifnei Hashem. As opposed to, by other cases, when it comes, Tosfos refers to some other places in Shas where we see that Lifnei Hashem means in the West. Those are things that anyway, by definition, have to take place in the Azara. So therefore, Lifnei Hashem can only mean to limit it to the West. So therefore, that's how we learn that Tinufa can be in the East. Next, the Mishnah said, Rabbi Kurim Kedivir of Elazar ben Yaakov, that following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Bikurim also required Tinufa. So Meir of Elazar ben Yaakov, where does he say something on the subject? D'tanya, as we learn in Braisa. When the Pasuk says, Loka HaKoyen, when it says the Koyen should take the basket from your hand, limit al Bikurim, Shetun in Tinufa, Divir of Elazar ben Yaakov. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, that means he takes it from your hand, and he and you wave it together. So my time is at Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. So why, what makes him say that? In other words, why does it? Fine, it says v'loka hakoyin. Maybe that's what it means. He takes it for you, and the pasuk continues v'yimichoy, and he places it on the floor. How do we know that it means that he actually waves it? And the answer is Gomer Yad Yad Mishlomim. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov learns Xavier Shava on the word Yad from a Shlomim. It says the coin should take the basket from your hand. By a Shlomim, Yodav to Vienna. His hands should bring his korban, meaning that the owner and the korban, meaning that the owner holds the shlomim, the pieces of the shlomim, the chaz of a shoyk and the neimurim together with the holds them together with the korban and they wave it all together. So therefore, there we see that the owner was waving it. So Malachal and Koyin, so Malach can Koyin. So now, so Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says that actually the Gzeira Shava teaches us in both directions. In the case of the Shlomim, the Pasuk says that he takes the Chos of a Shoyk and waves them, but it doesn't say anything about the Koyin being involved in the waving. Here by Bikurim, says Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, it says that the Koyin should take it from your hand, doesn't say anything about the owner holding it in his hand also. So therefore, we learn it's both. Ma kan Koyin, just like by Bikurim, it's done by the Koyin. Aflahalam, Koyin, the same way by Shlomim, the Tnufa is also done, it also involves the Koyin. Or Malahalam, Bailim, and just like by the Shlomim, it involves the owner. He's the one who brings it, and he's the one who holds it and waves it. Afkan Bailin, the same way Babi Kordim, it's the owner. Hakeik said, so Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says that how do you do that? Koyin maniach yodet tachas yidei Bailin, the Koyin puts his hands under the hands of the owner, and umeinif, and then they wave it together. So therefore, Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says, not only do we learn by Gzeira Shava that Bikurim require Tnufa, we also learn from this Gzeira Shava that both the owner and the Koyanim wave it together. Now, a point that Rishonim bring up is if you're requiring both of them to do the Tnufa, then won't there be a Chatzitza if both of them are doing it. Tosfos over here discusses that, yeah, that would be a problem. It would be chatzitza. Tosfos explains when later on it says the Kohen puts his hand, we're saying the Kohen puts his hand under the owner's hands. What it means is Tosfos says that the owner is going to be holding the top end of it, and the Kohen will be holding the bottom end. So in the case of Bikurim, which come in a basket, then it means that the owner will be holding it near the rim, and the Kohen will be holding the bottom of the basket. In the case of the Chos B'Shoik, then it would be something similar. The Kohen holds one part of it, and the owner holds a different part of it. So that's how Tosfos learns. Then Tosfos brings Rashi later in the Masechta, says that actually we don't really care. The main thing is that the owner does the tznufa, the Kohen is just coming along kind of for the ride, so therefore we don't care whether there's chatzitza between the owner's hands between them, we don't care, says Rashi. But Tosfos says, what do you mean? Why shouldn't we care? The fact is it says both of them in the pasuk. So in fact, Tosfos says the Yerushalmi, a relevant Yerushalmi, talks about this. Meaning that when it comes to the Mincha Soita, we said the Mincha Soita has to be waved, and the question, so there it's a woman, so the question is, if you have the same kind of thing, the Kohen and the owner have to wave it, doesn't that mean the Kohen is going to be touching the woman's hands, which is not sneistic? So the Yerushalmi gives a couple of possibilities how that'll work. Now Tosfos says that seems to prove that indeed we have the Kohen's hands and then the owner's hands on top of that, and you wave it, not like Tosfos's original explanation that it means they're holding different parts of it. Because if they're holding different parts, what's the problem? Then Tosfos says fine, even if they're holding different parts, the fact is it might happen that they accidentally touch one another. So therefore the Yerushalmi would still be bothered by that and gives his answers. But anyway, so Tosfos themselves gives the explanation that they hold it in two different places, and Rashi later on in the Masechta says that they hold it one's hands on top of the other, but we don't care because the owners are the main thing, but Tosfos is wondering why that should be so. Elsewhere, Tosfos says, look, it's Xeris HaKosev, but that's how it should be, so therefore here we're not worried about Chatzitza. So the Gemara says, now, the Mishnah is saying that this is only a point to Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov, implying that all the other Chachamim disagree with him. The question is, why can't the Mishnah say that Bikurim require Tnufa according to Rabbi Yehuda as well? the Tanya, we learn in a brace of Yehudaim, when the pasuk says v'hinachtoi, when the pasuk says that you should place it down, zut shnufa. That means during shnufa. So you have Rashi doesn't explain over here, but Rashi explains elsewhere in Shas how exactly Rabbi Yehuda learns that. Previously, the pasuk says v'nichoi, that you should put it in front of the mizbeach. So now, if it says v'nachdoi, then it must mean that you picked it up for tshnufa. And when exactly do you do it relative to, say, in the parasha, there's a lot of discussion about that. And then in case Rabbi Yehuda says, you learn from the word behinachtoi, that it means that you have to do tshnufa. Ato imazut tshnufa, continues the braisa, you're saying that it means tshnufa, or in el hanocha, maybe it actually means putting it down on the floor. No, true omer. Since the pasuk says v'hinichoi, you should place it. Harei hanocha omer, then that means you already placed it. Hamani mekayim v'hinachtoi. So what does it mean again? V'hinachtoi zut tshnufa means the tshnufa. So again, it can mean Rashi elsewhere explains that it means that if you're putting it down again, it must be that in between you picked it up for tshnufa. The word v'hinachtoi itself, Rashi elsewhere explains, can actually mean tshnufa itself. You have the word v'leinocham alekim, that Hashem did not lead the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim through the land of the Plishtim. So we see that the word v'hinachtoi, which is the same shodesh, can mean to lead, to move it around. And then there's various, there's several other different explanations of how exactly we learn that v'hinachtoi means tshnufa. Anyway, the point is Rabbi Yehuda also holds that the Bikurim do tshnufa, that the Bikurim require tshnufa. Why is the Mishnah saying that only according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov do they? And the answer is Amar Rava Hori LePosuk VeYakosif Tchila. Because it's true, both of them hold, but the Posuk that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's drasha comes from earlier in the Posuk. He learns it already from the word V'Loka HaKoyim. So therefore, the Mishnah is mentioning it in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, even though it's true Rabbi Yehuda also holds they require tshnufa. Rav Nachman Yitzchok however, Rav Gubrei, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, another reason is because Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is very powerful. He's a great chacham. We know the rule. Rashi says, Mishnas Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Kav Venoki. That when Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says something in a Mishnah, and some say in a Braisa as well, it's Kav, it's relatively little. He's not mentioned as often as the other Tanoim of his generation, like Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon and Rav Meir, but nevertheless, it's Venoki, it's clean. The halacha is like him in pretty much every place that he says. It's Machlokas Rishonim, whether it means only in Mishnayos or also in Braisas. There's also an interesting idea that's brought on it in various places, that the word Kav is Gematria 102, representing that there are 102 places in Shas where he says something in a Mishnah or possibly a Braisa, and the halacha is like him. So therefore, so according to either of these explanations, it's true. The Mishnah could have said Bikurim according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Yehuda, but for either of those reasons, the Mishnah chose to only mention that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov holds this way, even though in fact Rabbi Yehuda does as well. We said in the Mishnah that a Murish Shal, continuing the list of things that require that require tshnufa. So we said the emurim shalmei yachid. We said the emurim of the shlomim brought by an individual b'chaz of a shoyt shalahen, together with the b'chaz of a shoyt of the korban. Echad ha'anoshim, the echad ha'anoshim, both men and women, be Yisrael only by Jews, avaloi ba'achirim, but not by others, not by goyim. So the Gemara says, my palma, what does the Mishnah mean? Now the point of the question is, it actually explains that since it says v'loy achirim, if achirim just meant goyim, then it would have said v'loy benochrim, v'loy goyim, or whatever term the Gemara would use for it. Achirim suggests that it means not anybody other than men. So that implies that women don't do tshnufa, but we just said that women do tshnufa. So what does the Mishnah, so what does the Mishnah mean? It seems to be contradicting itself. So what is it? Do women do tshnufa or not? The answer is Amar Rabbi Yehuda Hakikama, Echad Anoshim VeEchad Anoshim Korban and Tohen Tshnufa. What it means is both men and women, the korban does require tshnufa. Or tshnufa atzma b'Yisrael, avaloi b'dei noshim. However, the tshnufa itself is only done by male Jews, not by women. So then when a woman brings a korban that requires tshnufa, then the kohen does the tshnufa all by himself. Again, as Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi, the one exception to that is the Minchas Soita, where the kohen and the woman do have to do the tshnufa together, and then the Yerushalmi deals with how they do it in a way that avoids problems of Hirhurim and Yetzirah and all that. First, the Yerushalmi says they would get an old kohen to do it. He's less likely to have Hirhurim. But then Tosfos says maybe not. But then the Rishonim goes on to say maybe not. Since it's only a short term thing, then maybe even a young Kohen is not going to be so bothered by Yetzer Hara by doing that. Again, according to Tosfos' explanation, that Snurka with the Kohen and the Onum is the holding different parts of it, then Tosfos says they're not necessarily going to touch anyway. But in any case, by other Korbanos, we're saying that women, that the Korban does require Snurka, however, the women don't do it. Instead, the Kohen does the Snurka all by himself. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, about this point. When it says Bnei Yisrael, when it says Dabra Bnei Yisrael Lemer, and tell them about this matter of Tanufa, we learn from that, Bnei Yisrael Menifin, they know to call Menifin. It means that only Jews do Tanufa, Goyim do not. If we say that Goyim can bring a Shlomim, if they can't bring a Shlomim, then the whole point is moved. Bnei Yisrael Menifin, they know Nosha Menifois. And we also learn from that, that only Bnei Yisrael, in a narrow sense, meaning the men, do tnufa, but not women. The Gemara points out in Kiddushin that anyway it's a mitzvah sesa shazman groma, because anything involving korbanos is only by day. But again, you do have a soita. Actually, there is another case where a woman does tnufa as well, and a woman nazir, a nazira, also has this waving of their korban that's done, and they are also, she does it, and they are also, she does it together with the kohen. Mind you, by the way, the Mishnah, when it gave a list of things that require tnufa, it did leave out actually in the case of the shlomim of a nazir. You actually have as well. You have the cooked leg of the korban, and one each of the two types of bread also required tznufa, and it didn't mention that in the Mishnah. It didn't mention the lachmei toida either. So at least as far as the nazir, the Mishnah had already mentioned the imurim of the shlomim. So fine, it just means in the case of a nazir, you have extra parts that go together with it. Anyway, the point is that ordinarily women don't do tnufa, but you do have two cases where they do, so maybe then in other cases they should, and therefore Tosfos and Kiddushin explains that as why we need a pasuk to tell us that they don't, even though we would think they should be pasuk anyway, because mitzvah is shazman grama. Now, continues the Braisa though, Amar Rav Yosi, Matzino Shechila Kakasa, ben Korban Yisrael, Lekorban Ovid Kacham, Lekorban Noshim Besmina. We do find though, says Rav Yosi, that the Torah makes a distinction between, so we find the distinction between Bnei Yisrael, between men, and then versus Goyim and women, as far as smicha, that only a man does smicha, but Goyim or women do not. So says Rabbi Yossi, I disagree with what the Tanakhama says. You would think we should make a distinction as far as tnufa as well, and say that women, and then say that women or Goyim don't do tnufa. So the answer is Lloyd. No, we don't make that distinction. Says Rabbi Yossi, Mali chilek b'smicha shasmicha b'baylin. The difference is the smicha is done specifically by the owner, not the tnufa shasmicha b'koyinim, as opposed to the tnufa. As opposed to the tnufa can be done by the koyinim. So the smicha, in other words, the only one who can ever do smicha on a korban is the owner. We can't even send a shliach. We're going to learn later on in the Masechtin. So therefore they're not going to do smicha. They can't even go into the azara. A goy can't even go past the chayil. And women, the Gemara elsewhere has an expression, v'chi'isha ba'azara minayin, what are women doing in the azara? They stay in the Ezra's Noshin. They don't go into the Ezra's Yisrael. Shitim Kubetzis points out another point as well, actually. So the Shitim Kubetzis and then several other Mephoshim make that point. Another point is, as far as excluding Goyim, is by Smicha, usually you confess the Averis you did, and a Goy is not going to be doing that. Although by Shlomim, the Rambam says you don't confess, instead you thank Hashem. So, anyway, the point is that, by the way, also by an Oyla, you do Smicha as well. A Goy can bring an Oyla or point to everybody, but again, he doesn't do Smicha. So Rabbi Yossi says that the difference is smicha has to be done dafka by the owner. He can't even delegate it to a shliach. Therefore, a woman or a goy is not going to do smicha. Nachat with tnufa, but how do we make the same distinction by tnufa? Shat tnufa b'koyinim, where tnufa, after all, can be done by koyinim when the owner doesn't do it. So therefore, says Rabbi Yossi, don't tell me that women don't do tenufa, that a woman's korban is not, that a woman's korban does not have tenufa. It does, but it can be done by the kohenim. Im kein matam alemim b'nei Yisrael. So then, what is the pasuk expressing by saying the words b'nei Yisrael? It means b'nei Yisrael menifin, means the b'nei Yisrael themselves do the tenufa. Whereas the goyim don't do tenufa of the korban themselves. B'nei Yisrael menifin rein anoshim menifos, and only Jewish men do tenufa. And women do not. So the Kohen does it on their behalf. So in other words, it comes out that all three, that whether a Jewish man or a Jewish woman or a goy brings a korban that requires tenufa, it comes out, and this is how Rashi learns, all of them are going to require tenufa. The difference is that in the case of Yisrael's, in the case of a man's korban, in the case of a Jewish man's korban, he and the Kohen will do tenufa together, and in the case of the women or the goyim, then the Kohen will do the tenufa by himself. On the other hand, Tosfos discusses and says that no, Tosfos has a long discussion about it and explains that no, and then with different views and all that, and explains that no, what it means is the goy's korban doesn't require tenufa at all. Nobody does tenufa with it. Neither the owner nor the Kohen. As opposed to a korban of women. Then it would be the Kohen himself does it, and the woman does not. And Tosfos brings in this connection of different Gusa from Torah's Kohenim that therefore comes to conclusion.
I'll send you second.
The Gemara says Tanya Idach. We learn in another Braisa on the subject of Tenufa. So the pasuk says Bnei Yisrael. Again, it says about Bnei Yisrael doing it. Any other Bnei Yisrael, you would only know that born Bnei Yisrael do tenufa. Gerim ba'avodim mishachronim minayim. How would we know that gerim or freed slaves, who in general are considered like gerim as well, minayim? How do we know? Because Tosfos points out sometimes the word Bnei Yisrael means more narrowly born Jews. So therefore we need a limud in the pasuk for it. Tosfos points out that there seem to be other Gemaras that say there are other places where the Gemara seems to take it as a given that Bnei Yisrael includes them as well. Tosfos says maybe in those places there's a ribui to that effect. Anyway, but over here we need a pasuk to tell us that Geirim and Avodim Meshacharim, if they bring a korban, that they also do tenufa. Tanu by Mahamakriv, therefore the pasuk says the one who offers. So when he offers, no matter who he is. Now, how do you know the word hamakrib means the owner? Maybe it means the Kohen who was actually offering the korban. Maybe he should read the tenufa. And then we wouldn't learn anything about gerim and so forth. So the Braisa says, "Shu oimid yod of Tiviana," but the pasuk continues, "His hands should bring." How they buy them omer? That refers to the owner, that his hands pick up the korban and bring it. So what does it mean? So that hamakriv would in fact mean the kohen hakeitzad. So what do we do? As we said before, kohen maniach yodav tachasid abayim umeidiv. So then kohen puts his hands under the owner's hands and does the tenufa, as we talked about before, how exactly that's done. So on the top of the omer we said Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov had learned it from a gzeirah shavah involving bichurim, but the other chachamim who hold that bichurim don't require tenufa, they learn it in the mishnah. So what do you do? How exactly do you do the tenufa with a shlomim? So maniach emurim al pisa sayad. You put the emurim first on the palm of the hand, the chazav shoyk alayhem, and then on top of them you put the chazav and the shoyk, and then you do the tenufa. And the Braisa continues, in every place also where there's bread involved, namely by the korbanos of a nazir and by a toida. So anytime there's bread involved, and also the shtei lechem that we learned in the Mishnah, then halechem milamayda, the bread is always on top. So the Gemara says Heicha. The Gemara says Heicha. Where do we specifically find that a pasuk that says that the bread was placed on top? Which from there we should learn to everything else. Amar Papa b'milui. So the Papa says by the miluim we find that the korbanos hamiluim that are described in Parshas Tzava and then actually carried out in Parshas Tzav and then in Parshas Tzav and Shmini, it says over there clearly that he put it, and it says clearly in Parshas Tzav that he took the basket of matzahs by yosem al chalovim al shoyk hayomim, and he put it on top of the chalev and on top of the right leg. So we see that over there, the so there we see that the bread was clearly placed on top of the pieces of the korban. So the Gemara says my timer. Okay, what's the reason? Why do they go in that order? First emurim, then cause of a shoik, and then bread. Is it because the pasuk says that they should bring the thigh that for truma and the breast of the animal that is there, that is to be waved? You find, by the way, that Truma and Shnufa mentioned separately by Shoik and Chaza. Rashi actually points out, I don't know why. The fact is you do Shnufa and you do Truma and Shnufa, as we said, go waving in all six directions to both of them. So why is it actually mentioning them separately? We'll talk about it in a minute. Best of them, we'll talk about an explanation of that from a Shamshin or Falavich. Anyway, so the process is Shoik at Truma, the Shoik which is lifted up, the Chaza at Shnufa, and the Chaza which is waved. Al Ishech, I love you. You bring them on top of the Chaylev, which is to go on the fire. To wave them, so that implies that that means in other words the chaylev first and then the chaz of the shoik on top of it. The problem is, but you also have the pasuk as a chaylev al chaz yivyenu in Parashat Tzav, where it says that you should put the chaylev on the chaz, so that implies that the chaylev is on top of the chaz. So what is it? The answer is Amar Abaya who demaisu lekoyin mebeisam et b'chayim v'romi lei. It means when the koyin first brings the pieces of the korban from the beisam et b'chayim. So they've shechted the korban, they've skinned it, they've cut it up. Now the koyin brings from the Beis HaMikdash B'chaim to the area where the owner is going to be, where the owner and the koyin are going to be doing the waving. So now at that point, the koyin brings the chaza with the chaylev on top of it. The romi lay, and then he places it on. Then he places it onto the hands of the kohen. And then he reverses the order. Then he takes off the chos of a shoik and places that. He takes off the chaylev and places it first, and then he takes the chos of a shoik and places them. So the Gemara says, "Vaksiv ayasimu asachalav malachoses." But we have another pasuk back in Parashas Shmini when it's describing how they did the korbanos on the eighth day of the Mimurim. There it says they placed the chaylev on the chos, so that also implies that the Mimurim go on top. And the answer is Ahudi Yorbe the Koyin Achrina, but also Makatole. That's talking about after they do the Tnufa, then they give it to another Koyin who's then going to go and offer it. So now we turn it over yet again, and the Emurim are on top. So why the Chaz of a Shoik are being brought at that point, they're not actually being offered on the Mizbeach, but that's how it is, we're saying. So the Gemara says, V'hokamash one, we're in a Shloisha Koyanim. So we see from this that we require three Koyanim to do the process. The first Koyan brings it from the Beis HaMikdash B'chayim, and he carries the Chaz of a Shoik with the Chaylev on top of them. Then he hands it to the owner and the Koyan, turning them over, so that the Emurim are first and the Chaz of a Shoik are on top of that. And then, after the Koyan and the owner do the Tnufa together, or the Koyan only, if it's a Koyan where only the Koyan does the Tnufa, then afterwards he gives it to a third Koyan who turns them over in the process yet again, so that the Emurim are on top, and then he goes and offers them to the Mizbeach. And the reason is, because the Pasuk says, but the greater number of people is the glory of the king, so therefore we want many different Koyanim to be involved in the avoda of the tnufa, and therefore we do it like that. So now we were saying that you have where it says tnufa in connection with the shoik and tnufa in connection with the chaza, and Rashi wonders why that is. The fact is we do both of them. So the Rav Shamshon of Fall Hirsch gives an explanation like this. But within a person, the korban after all is meant to be in place of the person. Well, it's one of the purposes of korbanos that a person should realize that he himself should have had these things happen to him, and Hashem has him bring a korban. And the case, and it's also that this way he should learn that the parts of the korban also represent his own emotions and feelings and whatnot that he should offer them to Hashem. So now, like this. Within a person, the breast, which contains the heart, represents his desires and his thoughts. The shoik represents his power of standing and walking and his power. So now what we're saying is that, you're waving it in the four directions and you're waving it up and down, implying that you're giving it to, so when you're waving it in four directions, he says that's more you're saying I'm not just keeping it for myself, I'm dedicating myself and my korban to the Jewish people in general. So I will be available. I will make myself available. I will make my agenda to be what the Jewish people need, what the Tzibur needs. But then Malo Murdered represents that I'm going to be under Hashem's Rishus and be doing things on earth in order for the sake of Hashem, to make a Dibur B'Tachtonim. So now what it has is that if we're specifically by a Shlomim, he says, where a Shlomim, a person brings a Shlomim when he's happy and in a good mood that things are going well for him. So now he does this, that before he starts eating, he's going to have to represent, he's going to have to graphically represent with these actions of his that he's dedicating himself to the Tzibur and to what the Tzibur needs and to what Hashem wants from him. So now, the reason why he ends up saying, so why does the Torah mention Truma in connection with the Shoik and Shnufa in connection with the Chaza? It's very easy, he says, with a person's mind and a person's desires to be concentrated on Hashem. It's much harder for him to concentrate it on what the Tzibur needs. People, after all, are self-centered. So it's much harder for him to realize to himself, you know what, my Chaza, my feelings and my emotions have to be addressed to the Tzibur as well. Therefore, Davka, the Torah specifies by there that you need Tznufa. You need to wave that in all four directions. Don't just think it's enough that your mind is focused on Hashem. It needs to be focused on Klal Yisrael as well. And vice versa, with the Shoik, which represents a person's powers, there he's more likely to say, you know what, my actual powers, my walking, my doing, whatever, that I can do for the Tzibur. But to dedicate them for Hashem is a lot harder to motivate himself. Therefore, Fakir, the Torah stresses, make sure you do Tzruma with that. Make sure you lift that up and down, and dedicate those powers of yours to Hashem. Okay. So that establishes then how we know that Tznufa is done by a private person's korban, and how we and the order and the way and the order and the procedure by which it's done.